The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black. Most of us know that gratitude is good and good for us. But many of us find it hard to sustain a meaningful life of gratefulness. So says Diana Butler Bass, who is the award-winning author of 10 books on American religion. Her latest book is called Grateful, The Transformative Power of Giving Thanks. She says gratefulness is not a magic fix, but it might just be the bright star directing us to a new and better place.
Diana, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, it's good to be with you.
So you've written a lot of books, and we're wondering why you decided to tackle gratitude for your latest one.
Well, I had gotten to a certain place with my writing career, and most of the things that I had written in the past were about Christian history or theology or trends around spirituality and religion. And all of those books were about subjects I knew well, because I actually have a PhD in religious studies. And so for 15 years, I wrote out of a well of knowledge that I had, a well of expertise. And then I got into my late 50s, and I realized I had pretty much said everything I wanted to say about the things I already knew.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about the kind of person I want to be over the next two and a half, three decades, however much time I get to have left in this lovely place. And I realized I wasn't very good at gratitude. And so for the very first time ever as a writer, I chose to write a book about something I didn't know much about. As a matter of fact, I had always struggled with it. And it's been an entirely different project for me because of that. Having to learn something from the ground up, getting rid of my own sort of misconceptions and even my own struggles about what gratitude isn't or is, and to try to learn something brand new.
Well, in your view, what is gratitude and what does it mean to be grateful?
Well, what it isn't is the fight that my mom and I had so often when I was a little girl, and that was a fight over writing thank you notes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I had thought it was for a very long time was an obligation to make sure that you said thank you if you got a gift, and that if you didn't, you were somehow not a very good person. You weren't well-mannered, or, you know, you weren't fit for polite company or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what it's not. And what I discovered in this process is that gratitude is both an emotion and it's also something we do about that emotion or from that emotion. And so gratitude is the feeling that we actually have when we receive something that we believe is a gift. And that's whether it's an actual gift, you know, something you get as a birthday present or a present from a friend or your grandparents gave you presents for Christmas, whatever. And we feel something about that. You know, we go, oh, what a surprise. Or, gosh, this person knows me so well. Or, this is amazing. It's exactly what I wanted, but didn't even know I needed it. And so there are these feelings that we get in response to gifts. And that is gratitude. That is a very important part of what it means to be grateful, is to recognize those feelings and to let those feelings wash over us, because those feelings are positive emotions and they're good for us. But then there's something further and deeper, and that is we can act on those feelings. And so when my mom was trying to teach me how to write thank you notes, it wasn't about obligation. It was really, it should have been, ideally, a way of enacting those feelings so that the gift giver knew that I appreciated them. And so we can act on our feelings of gratefulness by replying to the giver, by giving a gift to someone else, what we sometimes refer to as paying it forward, by doing a good deed that reflects our sense of abundance in the universe. And so those things are gratitude as well. So gratitude is both the feelings that we get and it's the actions that we choose to do out of those feelings that help us to live more meaningfully in community in the world.
What are the two types of gratitude that you talk about in the book?
I contrast these two different styles of gratitude. One is, I refer to it as debt and duty gratitude. And that's really, I think, you know, what my mother was unintentionally teaching me. I don't think really she had that she sat down and thought, oh, I'm going to teach my children that gratitude is about obligation. But when I talk about debt and duty gratitude, what it means is you get a gift and then you're under obligation to discharge the debt of the gift. And so often we think about gifts that way, is that someone gives you something, you have to give them something in return. And so gifting creates indebtedness. And I hear a lot of people talk about that. We have this language for debt and duty gratitude. When you get a present, you say, oh, I'm in your debt. Or, you know, oh, please don't give me that because I don't want to be indebted to you. And so we think of that as a cycle of gratitude that creates this idea of obligation or transaction. That kind of transactional gratitude is not what I talk about in my book. As a matter of fact, I talk about transactional gratitude as being not very good for us. It's not very good for our emotional lives. It creates resentment. It's not very good for our communal lives. It creates structures of power that nobody really wants to live under. But the other kind of gratitude, the one that surprised me as I wrote this book, was to discover that gratitude could be about gifts and response. And what I call gift and response gratitude is not structured under obligation, but instead it's really structured as choice. And so instead of when someone gives you a gift, you feel obligated in this transactional way to do something in return, that when you are given a gift, you have a choice to make. And that choice is saying thank you. The choice is offering kindness to someone else. The choice is letting the feelings of gratitude change who you are. You know, those feelings can make us more humble. They can create more kindness in our lives, a greater sense of generosity. And we have the choice to let those feelings really change us and take us to new places. So instead of it being transaction, we open our souls up to the place where a response to a gift is possible. And then we can choose a path to become a better sort of person. So gift and response gratitude is about a sense of freedom and a sense of purposefulness in a spiritual path.
You advise people to acknowledge that gratitude is not easy. Why do you think it's not easy?
Well, it's not easy as far as the idea of debt and duty. I think that most Americans feel somewhat awkward when we're given a gift, because we don't always know what to do with it. You know, we like presents, but on the other hand, a lot of us are taught to be sort of, you know, individualistic. Oh, I don't need anything. You know, oh, you didn't have to give me something. If you give me something, you know, I feel like we're obligated to each other in a way that makes me feel awkward. And so that kind of gratitude I think that many Americans just have a hard time with. And then there's a second set of things that makes gratitude very difficult, and that is different kinds of emotional issues that are related to our own lives. You know, if we feel entitled or a sense of privilege, like I deserve that gift, and that it's not really a gift, it's just something that you earned or that you should have anyway because you deserve, you know, you worked hard, and so it's yours. So you don't see things as gifts. So that sense, the senses of entitlement or privilege, really work against us seeing gifts as they are, which is pretty much everywhere. And sometimes we just don't see things as gifts. You know, we see it as something that's ours by right. And so that's really tough. But then there's another set of emotions that do block gratitude. And those are things like injustice and suffering and grief. And if you were a victim ever of violence, those things as well inhibit our capacity to feel gratitude. So I think all those things, the structure of gratitude as obligation or transaction inhibits it, especially around individualism. And then those two sets of emotion, either it's mine by right, entitlement and privilege, or suffering and violence and injustice, keep us from feeling grateful.
There's an interesting story about how grateful the transformative power of giving thanks came to be. You were asked to write this book before the 2016 presidential election, and after the election was over, you weren't feeling so grateful. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it was. I almost can't believe that I wrote this book in 2016 and early 2017. My publisher and I were talking about my next book project in late 2015, and we came to this conclusion that writing a book on gratitude would be something that would be fresh and interesting and that I could learn from. And so we agreed to it, signed the contract, you know, everything is all put together in April of 2016, finally, and the due date was April 1st, 2017. And so 2016 starts unfolding, and I found it increasingly difficult to write a book on gratitude because of everything that was going on in our political life. And, you know, I turn on the news, and between things like young men getting shot in the street in random ways by police officers and the violence going on in our cities, and then, of course, the rallies and the whole political campaign, I was so distraught by what I was seeing with the rise of Donald Trump that I could not focus on writing a book about gratitude. So there was one day late in the summer of 2016 when I had done a whole lot of research and I had done some structuring of the book, but I couldn't concentrate on what the overall theme would be. And it just wasn't coming. And I realized it was because I didn't feel very grateful. I felt scared. And so I pulled back. I said to my husband and I said to my publisher, look, there's plenty of time. April 1st, 2017 is a long way away. I'm going to sit this down for a little while. And I promise you, I will get back to it on November 9th. As soon as the election is over, because then everything will go back to normal. And of course it didn't. You know, it just got worse. And so the first 6 weeks after the presidential election 2016, I didn't even think about writing this book. I was just trying to figure out what had happened in the world around me. And finally, we got to the end of that year and I went, oh my gosh, I've got a book to write on gratitude. And I couldn't write it last year because all this stuff was going on. What am I going to do now? And literally what happened is I went into my office. So I think it was the second week of January. So it was a little bit before the inauguration. And I said, well, everyone says that if you're grateful, you know, it's a good emotion and it will begin to clear the way for other things to happen. So I thought, thought, what am I grateful for today? And I think that that day when I sat down to work on the book, I said, well, I'm grateful that Barack Obama is president for another 4 days. So that was my gratitude. And then I wrote for 5 or 6 hours. And that's what I did for the next 100 or so days. And what I didn't realize was when I handed the book in, I was a little late on my deadline, but I handed the book in on April 29th, 2017. That was when the first draft went to my editor. And I turned on the news that night. My husband and I were having dinner, and it was the 100th day that Donald Trump was president. So I literally spent the first 100 days of Donald Trump being president writing a book on gratitude. And it wasn't because I felt that way. It was because it was a deep commitment. I had to write the book. And because it was a commitment, that meant I had to take on these practices. And on that 100th day, when my husband knew that I had handed in the book, he said, you know, I think writing this book saved you.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, and I think that it did.
In what sense?
Well, I started out right after the election feeling absolutely stunned and sick and depressed. And I live in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., so I'm surrounded all the time by politics, and all my neighbors work in the federal government. And so my entire neighborhood was thrown into a sense of emotional turmoil because no one knew what was going to happen with their jobs and their agencies. And the change was so frightening and so huge. So I was in this environment that was constantly being emotionally challenged, you know, by what was going on. And I just didn't even know how I was going to get out of that set of feelings. But what did happen was, as I went through the process of writing this book, what they say about gratitude actually happened to me. And that was, I became much stronger. My sense of depression faded away. I began to get a sense of perspective on the universe around me. And I even began to feel much braver and less fearful of the changes. And so this all happened very slowly, you know, over a 3.5 or so month period. But by paying attention to gratitude, by thinking about the gifts that surrounded me, by practicing these, I was literally trying on all these different kinds of practices related to gratefulness. I just became a lot more resilient. I was able to really pick myself up off the ground and feel stronger. And that gave me a sense not only of resilience, but it also empowered my sense of political courage, where I've been to a number of different protests and rallies and got very involved in the Virginia elections in 2017. And so it really strengthened my ability to be involved in social justice and actions of political resistance.
What are some gratitude practices that are easy to start for somebody who hasn't journaled 100 days of gratitude, and for somebody who might be struggling with issues in their personal life or with the current political climate?
Yeah, it's really, I have to laugh when you say that, because, you know, I was forced basically to write 5 hours a day about gratitude for 100 days. And not many people have that happen to them. So having an easy practice is so important. And the easiest thing that I do, and it's not in the book because it came about sort of after the editing was done, is I actually have a little river rock that I keep next to my bed. And the river rock has the word gratitude engraved right across it. And so in the morning, the first word that I see when I wake up is gratitude. And at night, that's the last word I see right before I go to sleep. And what I typically will do in the morning is I just pick up that rock. It sits right next to my cell phone. So sometimes in the morning when I'm turning my alarm off, my hand actually hits the rock before it hits the phone.
Oh, good. I like that.
And so I'll go, oh, grateful. What am I grateful for? Oh, yeah, turn off the phone. And so I'll literally pick the rock up and I'll just hold it in my palm while I'm sitting in bed. And I'll think of one or two or three things that I'm thankful for that particular morning. And then I put the rock back down, you know, next to my bed. And I do the same thing before I go to sleep at night. And so at this point, I'm not keeping lists or writing things down. But I just have that as a little token. It's like a cue, you know, you see something and it reminds you to do something. So I see the word, it reminds me to say thank you. Thank you that I'm alive today. Thank you the sun is shining. And the weather has been so horrible on the East Coast that I haven't been able to say thank you, the sun is shining for a while. And I look forward to saying that again. So I've been saying thank you for the rain. My garden is growing. Or, you know, thank you for my daughter who is, you know, just a wonderful human. Thank you for my husband. Whatever it is. And what that does, that simple thing, is it just frames the day with a sense of appreciation. And it also makes me begin to look through the day at what are gifts in my life. And if I wasn't thinking that way naturally, I might miss things that surround me. I might not see them as gifts. I might just not be quite as attentive. So the little practice with the rock is really a practice of mindfulness. And anything that does that for you is great. I have some friends that literally, you know, with a cup of coffee, that they have some sort of thankfulness practice. And then other people I know do write things down. For a while, my daughter and I texted each other every night and just ask each other the question what we were grateful for during the day. So it really can be anything, and it can be quite simple, whatever happens to work for you.
What are the health benefits of gratitude?
Well, scientists say that if you're a grateful person, you have better health outcomes and major sort of medical crises, that you have, especially around heart health. Evidently, gratitude is very effective. It lowers blood pressure. It helps. There's a good number of medical studies that show that people who have had heart attacks recover more quickly and get to a place of greater heart health than people who do not have a gratitude practice. About 6 or 8 weeks ago, I was giving a lecture on this in Tucson, Arizona, in an Episcopal church, and it was a great crowd, and there was wonderful question and answer period, and a fellow got up and he said, he was probably about 75, maybe 80 years old. He said, I just came back from my cardiologist today, and he said to do three things. That is, lose weight, eat better, and keep a gratitude journal. And so that's a really interesting thing that medical professionals are now recommending, that these kinds of practices help to sustain, especially heart health over the long haul. But there's also shown to be effective in other kinds of recoveries as well, especially around cancer and depression, in addition to heart health.
What impact do negative emotions, so anger and fear and sadness, have on blocking gratitude?
Well, those are the things that I think, for me, were often the hardest emotions that were keeping me from feeling grateful. I'm not so sure I ever felt like I was deeply entitled to things. I think in some ways I'm like a lot of other women who were born in the mid to late 20th century. It's always been sort of a struggle for us to feel like, you know, we deserved stuff. We were not born in a culture necessarily thinking that. We worked hard and we came to realize that that women's work is really valuable. But that was a struggle. So entitlement was never really, I think, my major issue. But fear and anxiety and depression certainly were harder for me. And in this, in Grateful, I write for the very first time ever and talk about in public my own Me Too story. And that is when I was 14 years old. I was abused by by an uncle, and the level of destructiveness in my own emotional, sort of life. I still think I deal with it now, and I'm 59, but it brought forth an amazing amount of fear and anger were probably the two major emotions that I could deal with first. And those were very long lasting, but then also had ramifications around depression and just personal anxiety. I think anxiety and fear are slightly different. And so those negative emotions kept me for a very long time from feeling grateful, because it was very hard to create space for positive emotions when there was so much negativity and so much sadness that had to be cleared away. So I write in the book about how a very long trajectory of forgiveness eventually created space where gratefulness could come into the picture. So it was it was a long journey for me, and I'm really glad right now that so many women are talking about this in public, because, and I know that there are men who share this too, but I think it takes some really particular forms in the lives of women around self-destructive emotions. And so it was hard. It was hard for me to get to gratitude, but eventually, I got to both forgiveness and gratitude, even though I think that it's a lifetime worth of reflection and growing in maturity that is a journey that you'd never want to take. But for those of us who have been put on this path by people who victimized us, there are healthy and loving and graceful ways to go through that journey, which can really take us to somewhere where we can be the kind of people who can give great gifts to the world. And I think that having a real sense of gratefulness and generosity, for me, has emerged out of that journey.
And I know you'd also like to see businesses and towns and colleges and religious denominations encouraging the practice of gratitude. Tell us more about what you envision along those lines.
Yeah, I think it would just be amazing, because one of the things that I noticed as I was doing my research is that so many of the books around gratitude are written just about our own individual journeys. And so far in this conversation, I've mostly shared that about my journey or a journey of people who want to become healthier. But the thing about gratitude is it's naturally communal. You can feel, even when you feel grateful for seeing a sunrise, it's because you feel like the sunrise is a gift and that the universe has given you a gift. And all of a sudden you're not just there alone, but you're there with the gift of the universe. And so you're in community with a giver. And a lot of people perceive of that giver as God, but you can also perceive of that giver as just nature. And so now you're in a community, and that's the way gratitude works. There are givers and there are receivers, and then there are people then people give more. And so it's a communal thing. And I do know that there are some businesses and some civic organizations that are beginning this process of thinking about, well, what does it mean to be a grateful organization? And how could we increase our capacity for understanding things like abundance, the gifts of of not just people who contribute, say, financially to an organization, like in a church or a nonprofit, but there are all kinds of gifts. If you work in a for-profit organization, your employees have gifts, and they may be paid by you to be part of that company, but they're also giving of themselves. And people who really love their jobs and people who do the best at their work are not just people who are usually working for a paycheck, but they're doing it out of a deep sense of wanting to give their gifts to the world. And so if we can see each other in business and in education and in religion, and I hope in politics, as gifted people sharing our gifts to one another and opening up sort of a table of thanksgiving in every organization in which we find ourselves, I really think we could move to a place where we could see one another differently and hopefully open new paths of conversation and relationship, paths that are closed right now because of divisiveness and because of our lack of trust in each other. So I'm hopeful, and I have been encouraging, since I write mostly about religion and spirituality, I have a lot of work that I do with congregations and religious denominations, and I've been encouraging groups of people to do things like create communities of appreciation for each other. So in churches, for example, there's a lot of complaint. You know, people complain. They don't like the hymns. They think that the organist isn't very good. They're worried about where all the young people have gone. And so moving away from a culture of complaint towards a culture of appreciation would, I think, just make a lot of organizations happier and a lot more attractive to people who might be looking for community.
Diana, since our show is called Nobody Told Me, we end each show with the question, what's your Nobody Told Me lesson? So what could nobody have told you at the start of your journey writing this book about gratitude?
Oh, my. Well, nobody could have told me that I would actually find myself joyful in the middle of this political moment. And it's not a kind of joyfulness of denial, because, as I said, I live in Washington, D.C. suburbs, and so I know what's going on in the world around me all the time. I pay attention. Every morning, the Washington Post is open on my kitchen counter. So it's not a kind of joyfulness that is looking past the world or denying that all this is happening. But instead, I really have discovered this capacity for seeing what is truthful and beautiful in the world and leaning into that even at this difficult time. And that has made me joyful. And that is something nobody would have been able to convince me of at the beginning of 2016.
Diana, how can people learn more about you and your books?
I have a website, dianabutlerbass.com, and people can go there, find all kinds of stuff about where I'm going to be speaking and the other books that I've written as well. People can follow me on Twitter. I love Twitter. I mix it up about politics and religion and spirituality, and I oftentimes post poetry and sometimes prayers. So it's a real interesting mix of things that I'm passionate about, and people can, of course, like my public page on Facebook as well.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you again for joining us.
Oh, it's been wonderful. Thanks for the conversation.
It's been a lot of fun. That has been Diana Butler Bass, the award-winning author of 10 books on American religion and her latest book called Grateful, The Transformative Power of Giving Thanks. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You've been listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.
We'll be right back. When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.